H.P. Lovecraft's The Case of Charles Dexter Ward. Read and performed by William E. Hart. Chapter 5. A Nightmare and a Cataclysm. 6. The following morning, Dr. Willett hastened to the Ward home to be present when the detectives arrived. Allen's destruction or imprisonment, or Kerwin's, if one might regard the tacit claim to reincarnation as valid, he felt must be accomplished at any cost, and he communicated this conviction to Mr. Ward as they sat waiting for the men to come. They were downstairs this time, for the upper parts of the house were beginning to be shunned because of a peculiar nauseousness which hung indefinitely about, a nauseousness which the older servants connected with some curse left by the vanished Kerwin portrait. At 9 o'clock, the three detectives presented themselves and immediately delivered all they had to say. They had not, regrettably enough, located the Brava Tony Gomez as they had wished, nor had they found the least trace of Dr. Allen's source or present whereabouts, but they had managed to unearth a considerable number of local impressions and facts concerning the reticent stranger. Allen had struck Pawtuxet people as a vaguely unnatural being, and there was an universal belief that his thick, sandy beard was either dyed or false, a belief conclusively upheld by the finding of such a false beard, together with a pair of dark glasses, in his room at the fateful bungalow. His voice, Mr. Ward could well testify from his one telephone conversation, had a depth and hollowness that could not be forgotten, and his glance seemed malign even through his smoked and horn-rimmed glasses. One shopkeeper, in the course of negotiations, had seen a specimen of his handwriting and declared it was very queer and crabbed, this being confirmed by penciled notes of no clear meaning found in his room and identified by the merchant. In connection with the vampirism rumors of the preceding summer, a majority of the gossips believed that Allen, rather than Ward, was the actual vampire. Statements were also obtained from the officials who had visited the bungalow after the unpleasant incident of the motor truck robbery. They had felt less of the sinister in Dr. Allen, but had recognized him as the dominant figure in the queer, shadowy cottage. The place had been too dark for them to observe him clearly, but they would know him again if they saw him. His beard had looked odd, and they thought he had some slight scar above his dark, spectacled right eye. As for the detective's search of Allen's room, it yielded nothing definite save the beard and glasses, and several penciled notes in a crabbed writing which Willett at once saw was identical with that shared by the old Kerwin manuscripts and by the voluminous recent notes of young Ward found in the vanished catacombs of horror. Dr. Willett and Mr. Ward caught something of a profound, subtle, and insidious cosmic fear from this data as it was gradually unfolded, and almost trembled in following up the vague, mad thought which had simultaneously reached their minds. The false beard and glasses, the crabbed Kerwin penmanship, the old portrait and its tiny scar, and the altered youth in the hospital with such a scar, that deep, hollow voice on the telephone. Was it not of this that Mr. Ward was reminded when his son barked forth those pitiable tones to which he now claimed to be reduced? Who had ever seen Charles and Allen together? Yes, the officials had once, but who later on? Was it not when Allen left that Charles suddenly lost his growing fright and began to live wholly at the bungalow? Kerwin? Allen? Ward? In what blasphemous and abominable fusion had two ages and two persons become involved? That damnable resemblance of the picture to Charles, had it not used to stare and follow the boy around the room with its eyes? Why, too, did both Allen and Charles copy Joseph Kerwin's handwriting, even when alone and off guard? And then the frightful work of those people, the lost grip of horrors that had aged the doctor overnight, the starved monsters in the noisome pits, the awful formula which had yielded such nameless results, the message in minuscules found in Willett's pocket, the papers and the letters and all the talk of graves and assaults and discoveries, whither did everything lead? In the end, Mr. Ward did the most sensible thing. Steeling himself against any realization of why he did it, he gave the detectives an article to be shown to such Pawtuxet shopkeepers as had seen the pretentious Dr. Allen. That article was a photograph of his luckless son, on which he now carefully drew in ink the pair of heavy glasses and the black pointed beard which the men had brought from Alan's room. For 2 hours he waited with the doctor in the oppressive house where fear and miasma were slowly gathering as the empty panel in the upstairs library leered and leered and leered. Then the men returned. Yes, the altered photograph was a very passable likeness of Dr. Allen. Mr. Ward turned pale, and Willett wiped a suddenly dampened brow with his handkerchief. Allen, Ward, Kerwin, it was becoming too hideous for coherent thought. What had the boy called out of the void, and what had it done to him? What, really, had happened from first to last? Who was this Allen who sought to kill Charles as too squeamish? And why had his destined victim said in the postscript to that frantic letter that he must be so completely obliterated in acid? Why, too, had the minuscule message, of whose origin no one dared think, said that
Kerwin
must be likewise obliterated? What was the change, and when had the final stage occurred? That day when his frantic note was received, he had been nervous all the morning. Then there was an alteration. He had slipped out unseen and swaggered boldly in past the men hired to guard him. That was the time when he was out. But no, had he not cried out in terror as he entered his study, this very room? What had he found there? Or wait, what had found him? That simulacrum which brushed boldly in without having been seen to go, was that an alien shadow and a horror forcing itself upon a trembling figure which had never gone out at all? Had not the butler spoken of queer noises? Willett rang for the man and asked him some low-toned questions. It had, surely enough, been a bad business. There had been noises, a cry, a gasp, a choking, and a sort of clattering or creaking or thumping, or all of these. And Mr. Charles was not the same when he stalked out without a word. The butler shivered as he spoke, and sniffed at the heavy air that blew down from some open window upstairs. Terror had settled definitely upon the house, and only the businesslike detectives failed to imbibe a full measure of it. Even they were restless, for this case had held vague elements in the background which pleased them not at all. Dr. Willett was thinking deeply and rapidly, and his thoughts were terrible ones. Now and then he would almost break into muttering as he ran over in his head a new, appalling, and increasingly conclusive chain of nightmare happenings. Then Mr. Ward made a sign that the conference was over, and everyone save him and the doctor left the room. It was noon now, but shadows as of coming night seemed to engulf the phantom-haunted mansion. Willett began talking very seriously to his host, and urged that he leave a great deal of the future investigation to him. There would be, he predicted, certain obnoxious elements which a friend could bear better than a relative. As family physician, he must have a free hand, and the first thing he required was a period alone and undisturbed in the abandoned library upstairs, where the ancient overmantel had gathered about itself an aura of noisome horror more intense than when Joseph Kerwin's features themselves glanced slyly down from the painted panel. Mr. Ward, dazed by the flood of grotesque morbidities and unthinkably maddening suggestions that poured in upon him from every side, could only acquiesce, and half an hour later the doctor was locked in the shunned room with the paneling from Olney Court. The father, listening outside, heard fumbling sounds of moving and rummaging as the moments passed, and finally a wrench and a creak, as if a tight cupboard door were being opened. Then there was a muffled cry, a kind of snorting choke, and a hasty slamming of whatever had been opened. Almost at once the key rattled and Willett appeared in the hall, haggard and ghastly, and demanding wood for the real fireplace on the south wall of the room. The furnace was not enough, he said, and the electric log had little practical use. Longing yet not daring to ask questions, Mr. Ward gave the requisite orders and a man brought some stout pine logs, shuddering as he entered the tainted air of the library to place them in the grate. Willett, meanwhile, had gone up to the dismantled laboratory and brought down a few odds and ends not included in the moving of the July before. They were in a covered basket, and Mr. Ward never saw what they were. Then the doctor locked himself in the library once more, and by the clouds of smoke which rolled down past the windows from the chimney, it was known that he had lighted the fire. Later, after a great rustling of newspapers, that odd wrench and creaking were heard again, followed by a thumping which none of the eavesdroppers liked. Thereafter, two suppressed cries of Willett's were heard, and hard upon these came a swishing rustle of indefinable hatefulness. Finally, the smoke that the wind beat down from the chimney grew very dark and acrid, and everyone wished that the weather had spared them this choking and venomous inundation of peculiar fumes. Mr. Ward's head reeled, and the servants all clustered together in a knot to watch the horrible black smoke swoop down. After an age of waiting, the vapors seemed to lighten, and half-formless sounds of scraping, sweeping, and other minor operations were heard behind the bolted door. And at last, after the slamming of some cupboard within, Willett made his appearance, sad, pale, and haggard, and bearing the cloth-draped basket he had taken from the upstairs laboratory. He had left the window open, and into that once accursed room was pouring a wealth of pure, wholesome air to mix with a queer new smell of disinfectants. The ancient overmantel still lingered, but it seemed robbed of malignity now, and rose as calm and stately in its white paneling as if it had never borne the picture of Joseph Curwen. Night was coming on, yet this time its shadows held no latent fright, but only a gentle melancholy. Of what he had done, the doctor would never speak. To Mr. Ward, he said,
"I can answer no questions, but I will say that there are different kinds of magic. I have made a great purgation, and those in this house will sleep the better for it."